Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to another edition of Dolphins in Depth. I am your host, Omar Kelly, Miami Herald Dolphins columnist. And today, we are still wrapping up some draft talk. Getting into some of the peripheral stuff on that comes the week after the draft. And I wanted to bring on one of my favorite talent evaluators, Emory Hunt, CBS Sports HQ, football game plan analyst, does an amazing draft guide and really has a good perspective on not just the top 100 talent, but your undrafted talent too. And we'll get into that a little bit later on in this episode of the In-Depth Dolphins In-Depth podcast. But first off, Emory, I just want to get your viewpoint. Did the 2024 draft, did it live up to expectation?
I think so. And it's been a running theme for me since 2020, since the COVID year, where we've seen these super deep and talented draft classes. A lot of guys have either gone back to school or obtained an extra year. So what we've seen subsequently in a draft is talent all throughout the seventh round. You're like, wow, this guy's still on the board. And even dipping into the undrafted ranks, you're like, wow, that guy went undrafted. That's crazy. Like, for example, a guy like Cody Schrader, the SEC leading rusher from Missouri, who was phenomenal, went undrafted. And it's like, that's how deep and talented the draft class is. And it has been since 2020, which is why I always laugh when folks say, well, this draft isn't deep. This isn't a deep class. Like, you crazy. It's always a deep class with the amount of football talent that's out there across the country.
Yeah, I will disagree with you a little bit because I'm tired of 6-year, 7-year eligibility players. By the time you get to the NFL, you're 24 years old. And I get it. It's not going to factor into the career that you're going to have once you get there, but the lifespan of your career is kind of a little bit short. But let's talk a little bit about the Dolphins draft class, because most of the people who are watching Dolphins in Depth are here specifically for the Dolphins. How would you assess the entire class? And then we'll get into specific players.
I'm different in the sense that I include the undrafted free agents. So guys that they've already kind of announced that they have or have signed, I include that in the draft class because the Dolphins are one of the few teams that do a great job of the eighth round draft picks, right? So they do a fantastic job of getting guys undrafted that end up being contributors, significant contributors on their roster. So with all of that being said, I thought they did a great job. And you clearly saw an emphasis for Miami on speed, number one, but also speed off the edge. They want to get guys that can get to the quarterback. And I thought they did exactly that with two draft picks in Chop Robinson and also Mo Kamara, and in the undrafted free agent market in Grayson Murphy out of UCLA.
So Grayson Murphy, you look at him as a guy who potentially could make this team. I mean, I know we're going to talk about undrafted players later, but what is it that you saw from him in the college process that made you think that he could be somebody who makes it?
Man, when you watch UCLA and you're watching Latu, it's hard not to, see everyone else within that defensive front seven. They were balling defensively within the front seven last year. And Murphy is someone that really can get it off the edge, does a great job versus the run. He does the same things that Latu does in terms of playing with his eyes up. So he's seeing everything and allowing his hands and his feet to follow suit and get there to make the play. This was somebody I thought would get drafted because he was just as disruptive as Latu was on the other side. Obviously, Latu is a little bit more athletic, a little bit more twitchy, dynamic. I get it. That's why he went first round. But Murphy is someone that can really be a foundational defensive end for a team. I graded him as a 4-3 end because of how well he can do versus the run, in addition to what he can do getting after the quarterback.
So size doesn't concern you. We had some productivity at 21 and a half sacks in 31 games, but size doesn't concern you at all?
To me, size is not a skill. if you're good enough, you're big enough. And as much as we talked about these Pac-12 offensive tackles at Washington, at Oregon State, at USC, at Utah, he was right there in that same conference doing what he does best, and that's getting to the quarterback. So he was doing it at the highest of levels in the Power Five conference and doing it at the highest of levels in an elite part of the conference where this was a big offensive tackle year for the Pac-12, and he was one of the top pass rushers.
Now let's move on to the first round pick, Chop Robinson. Emery, I don't know how to put this politely, but when I look for pass rushers, and this is generally where I start, I look for guys 20 plus sacks or more. Hopefully you've played at least 3 years. I mean, obviously everybody's got to play 3 years, but I would like for you to have 20 plus sacks or more in your 3 years of participation in college athletics. Chop Robinson, I believe, is at 11 and a half. Now, we could talk about the twitchy traits, and we could talk about the comparison to Micah Parsons, which I think has a lot to do with the fact that he played at Penn State, because they didn't even play the same position. But why was he a legit, unquestioned first-round pick by all analysts, despite not having college productivity?
You look at, you touched on it, the traits, number one. That's a given. You got to have traits, number one. But when you watch him play, I like to say disruption is production. So he may not have had the sacks, but go look at the guys on the opposite side of him, you know, whether it's the D tackle or the opposite defensive end, and look at their sack productivity. It's probably high, probably higher than his. Why? Because he's moving guys off the spot. He's flushing quarterbacks up in the pocket or outside the pockets where he's funneling it to his help. And those guys are reaping the benefits of, you know, getting those numbers.
So you're saying everybody else is eating off his plate?
Bingo. And so, but he's setting the table for everybody, which is what you want, right? You want guys that can do that. Now, the true elite teams that have, you can't go anywhere because they have someone that's just as a dog on the opposite side that's also creating havoc. But I feel like for him, being able to move a quarterback off the spot and being able to chase what he's going to have to face in the AFC, I mean, you start with in your own division, Josh Allen.
That's a good point.
You look at the AFC North, all those dudes can run. Even Burrow can get out there and scramble and make something happen, right? And then you look at the AFC South, Richardson, Stroud, Levis can run. You look at the West. So you got to be able to chase these guys. And I feel like that's someone, and this, again, it's been a common theme with their draft on the edge. Guys that can not only run but change direction, that are twitchy. So they didn't pick up guys that are 6'5", 260. All those guys are cut from the same height, weight, speed cloth.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's the one concern I have about Chop Robinson. Clearly, the college productivity wasn't there, but there is some concern about edge setting ability in the NFL against NFL caliber offensive tackles. And the one thing I noticed looking and doing my research is I could not find a bench press. I cannot get a baseline bench press. And I know he supposedly bench pressed 400 pounds, and that's great. But I would like to have a consistent understanding of where you are strength-wise in 225 pounds. And I don't have that number. And for we to go through the whole draft process and not have a bench press, to me, that's a little bit of a red flag. Where are you in terms of your comfort level in him being able to set the edge in a defense?
Listen, for me, it's all football is a game of leverage. You hear low man wins, right? And he has natural leverage because he's not the tallest guy or the longest guy. So he really has to win with twitch, quickness, and get up into the body. It's no different than on paper, you're looking at Mike Tyson versus Razor Ruddock. Like, Razor Ruddock should knock him out. He got reach, got length, he got it. Tyson dip underneath him and warm his ribs up, and then boom, he's out. You know what I'm saying? And so if you're able to win with leverage, because we see all the time, guys have length, but they don't know how to play with length. And some guys that don't have the length know how to win with leverage. We see this with shorter offensive linemen that are able to get into the body and underneath those pads of defensive linemen that have length and move those guys up out the way. So when you are Chop Robinson size or Mo Kamara size or Grayson Murphy size, you've been that size your whole life, so you kind of know how to play and win with what you have at your disposal. And leverage is just as good as having weight room strength because, again, if I can get underneath your pads and you're playing a little bit high, I'm going to lift you off the ground despite being shorter, smaller, and probably not as strong as you are as an offensive lineman.
Now, this is my final question regarding Chop Robinson, the Dolphins' first selection at pick number 21. I saw, read, did my own work. To me, the only two players that I would have considered for that spot at 21 would have been Duke offensive lineman Graham Barton. And then also one guy, I heard Mel Kiper, and I think he probably would have been a little bit good of a fit for Miami in terms of what they're missing and what they need, was Darius Robinson from Missouri. Where would you sit on that? If I stacked all three of those players up on your board, where would you sit in terms of that selection at 21 if you were Chris Greer?
Well, it makes sense for Barton because of his versatility. Some people see him as a tackle, some see him as a guard, some see him as a center. So you like having a guy, especially, you know this, where it's not really about the 53, it's the 46 game day roster. Like, you have to do more. And the linemen, unfortunately, don't get the luxury of having nine deep. So you're gonna have to play multiple positions on game day. So I can understand the Barton selection. Robinson, to me, is more of a five technique. So when you're looking at the Dolphins, you're asking, okay, can he start over a Zach Sealer? Can he start over someone like DeShawn Hand? Is he going to be that guy that we need just to kind of occupy a double team, lock, extend, and walk back? Or do we need someone that can kind of keep that pass rush rotation going? So I understand why they went with Robinson, because – yes, you
which
have
Robinson? Yeah, they went with Chop Robinson.
Chop Robinson.
You wouldn't have gone with Darius Robinson for Miami.
No, because again, here's the thing. You like the starters that they have in Jalen Phillips and Bradley Chubb. But we know pass rush is about waves, and is no different than throwing a running back in there that has fresh legs at the end of the game, the closer or whatnot, whether he's a speed guy or a power guy. Everybody's tired. Here he comes in fresh legs, ready to close out the game. You need those waves in pass rushers, and it gives them something that they don't have. Now you get creative in how you deploy those guys on the field. We you know, a lot of times people call it a NASCAR package. You get three guys out there on the field that can rush the passer, right?
Yeah, wide so nine. I feel play like, a little bit of wide nine and get after guys, especially after, on third down.
Especially within your division.
Mm-hmm. Let's move. We're here talking with Emory Hunt, one of my favorite college football analysts and also a draft guru. Patrick Paul, this is probably one of the most intriguing picks, in my opinion, of the Dolphins draft, because they looked at it from the standpoint of, I'm not addressing an immediate need, but I am addressing something that's paramount and definitely needs to be developed for the future. So this wasn't necessarily a selection for 2024, even though we know Teron Armstead has struggled to stay healthy throughout his career. And to be honest with you, he doesn't practice. Teron does not participate in OTAs. He does not participate in training. He does one practice per week in training camp, does not participate in the exhibition season, and then he practices once per week during the regular season. So Patrick Paul will get a lot of snaps, but those snaps are not necessarily for 2024. They're for 2025, when he'll likely replace Teron Armstead. In your opinion, was that the right pick, going developmental offensive tackle instead of maybe an offensive guard that can help you right now?
Yes, because the draft is all about acquiring assets, and I do feel like getting someone like Paul, you can't find 6'7", 330 walking on the streets of South Beach. So
6'7", 330 with coordination.
Bingo, right?
With coordination and strength, because he did 30 reps at 225. So, and I'm like, that's pretty good.
Right. You get that intel, and you have the luxury because of how you laid it out so perfectly. Armstead is the perfect vet to be behind because he doesn't practice. So you're going to get a ton of reps. You're going to get to work that time on task. You're going to get to work on getting your hands up quicker on a defensive line where I feel like he has to improve with his length, right? You get to work on those things, learn how to be consistent with your anchor and really sit in that chair, because he does a good job of anchoring. So once he latches on, it's a wrap. You might as well consider your rep done, because you're not pushing him off the spot. You're not moving him. He is rock steady as a tackle.
How do you feel about his feet? How do you feel about his feet?
I don't mind his feet. I think his feet are fine. I think his hands are mostly where I have the concern, in terms of what we talked about earlier with Robinson, having length and playing with length. He has it, but what good is having long arms if you get them up on a defensive lineman, not, you know, slowly. So you got to be quicker with those hands. That's the difference between a Patrick Paul and an Olu Fashanu, who has the long arms, and he quickly gets on you right away. So not only is he keeping you so far at bay, but he's controlling the rep. And I think that's where Paul has to work on his game in terms of getting his hands up quicker, which is the perfect spot to do so in Miami behind Armstead.
Now, I've had this conversation on these Twitter streets, and I don't know why I engage on in Twitter conversations sometimes with the casuals, as I call them. But there's a section of fans who think that he could play guard. Do you think that that's remotely even a possibility?
I mean, that's a trendy thing to say. Everyone always wants to, and makes people sound smart, like, just kick him down inside the guard, you know, or just hit the flat receiver, or just, you know, you put him in the slot. That's another thing. Like, just put the receiver in the slot. Like, everybody wants to say things without actually seeing how it would actually work in practice. You know, a guy may be, it may sound good to move a guy inside a guard, but that's like, to use this example, Omar, that's like saying we're going to move you from a columnist to an analyst. Those are two different roles, right? You're asking me to do two different jobs. Or in my case, hey, Emory, we're going to move you from color commentator to play-by-play. Yes, we're in the same broadcast booth, but that's two different jobs. That requires a different skill set. Going from tackle to guard are two different roles and two different skill sets. That's why Barton would have made sense, because he has shown on tape that he can do both. Some guys may not be able to make that adjustment. Now, you hope during your scouting process you involve the O-line coaches to work these guys out to see if they're able to do that, then that could be a possibility. But just blanket saying Moody's got a guard, that's just foolhardy.
Yeah. Let's get a little bit deeper into this draft. And I know we addressed Muhammad Kamara, but before we talk about him, I want to talk about Jalen Wright, who, I'm going to be honest with you, I don't have the time to look at running back. It wasn't a position of need for the Miami Dolphins, so I didn't look at any of them. But then when I saw that they made that selection, traded up to get into the fourth round to make that selection to pick the Tennessee running back, who had a ridiculous yards per carry average, I said to myself, like, okay, this guy must be special, especially since you've got a very deep stable of running backs. The last time they did that was Devon Achane, and we see how that all turned out. Where would you stack up Jalen Wright in this guard class? And did you feel like he's a good fit for Miami?
I feel like there was a bunch of backs that I had the same grade on. So it shows you, and none was a first round grade. So for me, there was a bunch of guys that would, I felt like, were really RB2s, which is fine because you need three backs in today's game, right?
If not four.
Right, exactly. You see what the Jets did. They took like two. They took my number one back, my number three back, and Isaiah Davis and also Braylon Allen behind Breece Hall, which is like, damn, like, how are those guys going to play? But for Jalen Wright to fit in Miami is perfect because he is similar to what they already have in Raheem Mostert, you know, or what they had in Mostert in San Francisco and now with the Dolphins. So he's the same type of back, where if the hole is there, goodbye, because he's gonna outrun you. The problem is if the hole isn't there and he has to create, he doesn't have that natural wiggle or ability to find a lane, work front side to back side. He is a predominantly front side runner, one cut downhill guy, and outside zone specialist. And if he gets the edge, again, get the extra point team ready because it's going to be a touchdown. No different than what they have across the board in the backfield with all these dudes that can run.
Yeah.
So there's no downside going from their first team to fifth team because all these dudes can fly.
Let me ask you about his yards per carry average. And I watched some of his tape I thought to myself, man, Tennessee must have a whole lot of offensive linemen coming into this draft, because there were caverns size holes for him to run through. And I thought to myself, man, that explains why you average 7 yards per carry. But why was he only 137 attempts?
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up, because you've been around the block a lot. So have I. So we've seen this before, right? Remember how everyone sort of had the same kind of knock against Nebraska running backs when they was running the triple option, like Amon Green, those cats that was averaging like insane yards per carry as the eye back, because you're getting the pitch and you already are out there and just like it's easy for you, right? You didn't really have to do much. But for Tennessee, they don't do it with the triple option. They do it with formations. So not only do they spread the field to the boundary with receivers that align, sometimes you have double receivers lined up outside the numbers. So you expand the width and you have wide split. So it's like, man, they are able to make the field look like a CFL field with how well they spread width-wise, right?
Okay. So that means Mike McDaniel's going to be stealing some plays, is what you're saying.
We've seen that before. We saw it last year with the Tyreek motion, whatever he called it.
That's Jets, yeah.
They do that in the CFL. That's easy. So, again, if you're able to make them stretch to 53 and a third, man, it's hard. And so that's why getting speed in space is crazy.
Where did you have Jalen Wright ranked in your backs? And what round did you have him projected as?
I would say if you could translate my grades to round, they're probably around fourth round, something like that, mid round. But I had him at a 74.5 grade. Which is like RB2-ish. And because people could see the number, 21st ranked running back, but I grade like 120 running backs. So, you know, and I have like 10 guys with the same grade. So, you know, it's saying like, if I say, oh, he was my 21st ranked running back, that really doesn't say much. But when I say he's a guy that could be a spot starter, and you look at him amongst the other 13 guys that have a 74.5 grade, it makes sense to you.
Gotcha. Let's get into Mo Kamara. Every analyst that I know, I think even you brought him up when I talked to you on All Dolphins podcast. Every analyst that I know and respect have brought him up in the draft process. Undersized guy. Clearly, we talked to him, got the dog. College productivity off the chain. So why is this young man sitting there in the fifth round then?
Because he's 6'1", 245, and you want to hear something crazy? He is my number three edge rusher. You know who's number four? Chop Robinson. I'm a big fan of Kamara's game, and he's explosive off the edge. And there were some times when I was watching his tape, and I'm like, it felt like I was watching, and I'm not saying they're comparison. You'll get what I'm saying when I'm saying this. It felt like I was watching Junior Seau at the Chargers, like, oh, he's clearly offside. They're about to throw the flag. Like, no, he wasn't offside. That's how fast he got off the ball. It was like, man, how is he always the tackle knows he's going to get a great jump, and you still can't get out there fast enough. But by the time the quarterback gets the ball, he's already at the ear hole of the offensive tackle, and then he bends the corner and gets a sack. Now, with that being the backdrop, you combine his size, and people we know, like, size matters to a lot of people, but also during games, it is like a great 3-point shooter, right? But they're knocking threes. It's like, man, it's crazy. You know, he knocking them down, but then you don't realize he went like two quarters without hitting jack. Then he picks back up again. So you like to see that consistency down in, down out from him, and that's where he probably ended up dropping in the draft. But as far as pure rushing the passer, tremendous talent.
30 and a half sacks in his, what was it, five seasons in college athletics, which is just the norm now. Obviously, he's an undersized guy, so he wasn't going to enter the draft. And I support it. I think every player should get five seasons and be able to play. I know it was a COVID rule. What do you think he needs to develop to have a productive NFL career? And I'm not just talking about being a rotational player or a special teams guy, but I'm thinking about because right now, when you look at where Jalen Phillips and Bradley Chubb are, it might be possible that he has to play 400 snaps this season. What does he have to do to develop his game?
He has to develop a changeup and get multiple things in his bag. Like, remember how Dwight Freeney at one point in time was just like straight speed off the edge, boom. And then he developed this spin move. It was just like, you know, the spin move coming, and then you still couldn't stop it. Well, you want to see Kamara develop some sort of changeup off his speed rush. You can't just always try to go and dip underneath the shoulder of an offensive lineman, which is fine if you can get it. But if they, if you're dealing with skilled offensive linemen, as you will do,
yeah, you're not, that ain't gonna, that ain't gonna work with Teron Armstead,
right? They're gonna put that, they're gonna wait and strike you and lay you down on the ground like a bug, right?
Yeah. Especially if they know that's the only thing that's coming.
Bingo. Yeah. That's the part that a lot of college athletes, I wish, understood how skilled the NFL player is. So you better have multiple answers to the questions that they
know. Miami's Kendall Langford, a backup for 10 years, is far more polished than just about everybody you faced in your entire college career. And he's a backup. But most people don't get that, which is why I'm a little bit, whenever you draft a small school player, I do have my concerns about how much quality talent has he faced. And that was one of the issues I had with Patrick Paul, where I struggled a little bit to find some good pass rushers that he was going up against. Because, you know, blocking a UMass defensive end ain't that hard to do. NFL is a totally different animal. Let me ask you a little bit, Emery, about these slot receivers, and I'm just the Washington brothers, even though they're not brothers, Washington cousins, Malik and Taj. Where did you have them ranked and viewed? And did it surprise you that Miami said, all right, let me double down on the slot, even though they kind of need some size?
Man, listen, half speed will travel. Like, Miami don't play around with that, boy. Like, if you can run, you will be in South Beach. Malik Washington, I know I had a lot of fans in terms of going him going first round. He was my number 10th slot receiver.
First, what fans? What, huh?
Some people wanted him in the first round. Like, and this was just obviously draft Twitter talk. You know, some people had like high grades on him, which is fine. He's still pan out. But, you know, because of the Tank Dell spillover, right? People watch Tank Dell and try to say Malik Washington was Tank Dell 2.0. Could possibly be,
but they're not, you know, the same player, bro.
Definitely not the same player. Washington's a little bit more dense in terms of, like, he's built like a running back. Dell is built like a receiver. And that's what I like about Washington, is the fact that he is someone that he can win deep down the field, he can win on the perimeter, he can also break a lot of tackles because he's built like a running back. So he's, you think short, small, like, nah, he's short and kind of stocky, which is good. He's almost built like Tyreek Hill. You know, but not as explosive, but he's a little bit more savvy as a route runner. Then Taj, man, Taj is straight classic USC, you know, RJ Sauer type speed. Like, he can fly, boy. Like, he is someone that you give him a little slant and he's gone. He's 5'10", about 175. So perfect, you know, slot guy, a flanker. I think I got him as a flanker. I got him as my number 9 Z receiver. I still say flanker, but Z is for people.
Really? You think he's more of a flanker? You don't look at him as a slot? You think he can move?
I think he can move. I think I love his route running. I love his ability to.
So he can do it. He can hit a 9.
He can hit a 9. Yeah. And here's the thing. I think a lot of people look at size and just automatically throw guys inside. But if you think about this, right? Think about it this way. If you have this level of speed, or when you have speed, you kind of want speed on the outside, because what speed on the outside does, pulls those safeties away. You want size going down the middle, because size can win over the middle of the field, right? So people Absolutely. Think size outside as opposed to – that's why I love what Miami does, man. They think big picture globally.
Conceptually, absolutely.
So somebody like Washington, watching him work, he had a really good Shrine Bowl. And so I feel like his route running is a little bit more nuanced than people give him credit for. So you can put him outside as a Z. And a lot of these are crossover positions anyway. Like, a Z could technically be a slot, can technically be.
They got a whole stable of Smurf receivers that I guess are going to be used interchangeably. Hopefully some of these guys can learn multiple spots. I've learned that their offense is super complicated and it takes guys a minute to learn it. But when you got a stable of Smurf receivers, I guess they all got to play multiple positions.
Well, we know this. And the reason why you do it this way, people get tired. But you know who don't get tired? Fast dudes. So imagine, like, fourth quarter, okay, Waddle need a breather. Hill needs a breather. And here comes Taj Washington and his blazing speed. It's like, geez, like DB tired. Yeah. But this dude's fresh and fast, you know?
I mean, you could – technically play both of those guys, have them run 15 clear out routes. And then and that's the funny thing. People don't realize how much Tyreek rotates in and out of the game. And I saw it. And I was like, man, this is really smart. And then what people wonder why he's just running by people for in the fourth quarter. That's because he's been rested. The one guy that is really flying under the radar, and it happens to be a tremendous position of need for Miami, because before they selected Patrick Morris, they only had three safeties on the roster. And that's still a little troubling. I think there's a possibility that they can move some of those other guys to safeties, because Nick Needham and Ethan Bonner, I know they play safety in the dime packages. But what did you see from Patrick McMorris that said, hey, this is a draftable prospect?
He was my number nine combo safety. And so how I grade safeties, Omar, free safety, strong safety, combo safety. The combo safety to me is someone that could double as a slot corner, slot defender, but also has the ability to play both free and strong. So what I'm saying is you get someone that has your safety mind, safety skill set, but also can play down in the slot, can give you good coverage, but also
so you strong. Think he's got slot potential,
right? Can also play. He also keeps you strong versus the run, because a lot of guys you try to throw in the slot are terrible run defenders. But you throw a safety down there that can also cover. You're strong versus the run, but also good versus these receivers as well. So I think he has that capability. Had a really good Hula Bowl as well. Then we saw him go to the combine. So he was a really good receiver. This was another excellent pick by the Dolphins.
Let's get into some of these undrafted players, because I can honestly tell you I'm not that familiar with the Storm Ducks of the world and the Brayron Matthias, the basketball player from USF, and Andrew Myers, Hayden Roussey, the tight end. Where do you see Mark Perry, strong safety, Isaiah Johnson, a cornerback, Leonard Payne Jr., a defensive end? Where do you see who out of this undrafted class has the best chance of making it onto the 53?
It's interesting looking at the defense, and we talked about Murphy, so you know how I feel about him. Johnson was interesting. Johnson's an older player. He transferred to Syracuse from Dartmouth. I remember having discussions with him, thinking that he was going to just leave out of Dartmouth, be that big fish in the small pond, because Dartmouth at the time had produced some fantastic players that have gone and played in the NFL. Especially in the secondary, but he goes to Syracuse, kind of gets, just lost in the shuffle. But he's an interesting player to watch, core special teamer. Storm Duck, to me, is someone that's forgotten about a lot, because he was at North Carolina, played at App State, ended up at Louisville. Steve Ellis is a fantastic defensive back coach and has produced guys in the pros. Traverius Ward at Middle Tennessee State, Jaquan McMillan at East Carolina, and now he has Storm Duck and Jarvis Brownlee out of Louisville. But Storm Duck is going to be a good player. I think he has a good chance to make it. On offense, I look at Jaquan Burton of Florida Atlantic. I was at the College Gridiron Showcase, the postseason All-Star game, which is in Fort Worth, Texas, and I was like, this dude clearly is playing four speeds ahead of everybody else. Like, when I talk about getting down the field, and we know one-on-ones is heavily slanted for the offense, but man, when you talk about someone that has quick twitch and burst and acceleration, that's him, and able to track the ball over his shoulder. He could do that. You go and watch his film. He was open a lot at Florida Atlantic, but quarterback play was inconsistent. Couldn't get him the football. So that's someone to keep an eye on. And that's the undrafted haul that I pretty much had guys that had great So Hayden Roussey is another one. Richie is another one that out of Arkansas, I believe. Really good tight end. Someone that can move, or Wisconsin, I'm sorry, someone that could be your H-back, can move. And another one of these guys that it's going to be tough for him because of the position, but you see the common theme with Miami. They wanted guys that can move, because athleticism kills at the NFL level. But listen, the guys that I mentioned, Perry's a good strong safety out of TCU. So him, all those dudes have a good shot, because we've seen this before. Robert Jones was a guy, I think it was like my number four or five tackle the year he came out. He went undrafted, and right now he's a starter for the Dolphins, and and made the team. So they give guys shots to make teams and be significant players. So I think these guys that have chosen to go to Miami as an undrafted free agent really have a legitimate shot.
Well, to wrap up our conversation here on Dolphins in Depth with Emory Hunt, I want you to give the Dolphins a draft grade and tell me the one guy that you think that in 4 years we're going to be looking at another Christian Wilkins situation where how are they potentially going to be able to re-sign this guy?
That's a good question. I give them an A because I love what they did. I give them an A, but I truly feel like we'll be talking about Mo Kamara in the same way that it's funny because they went to the same school, same type of questions.
Joey Porter.
No, Shaq Barrett. Shaq Barrett. Shaq Barrett was the same type, you know, and it was funny to see Shaq Barrett, come out of, undersized. Well, we don't know. And all Shaq Barrett did was just become a straight stud across the board. You know what I'm saying? And so I feel like Kamara is cut from the same cloth. Colorado State guy, undersized edge rusher. Mountain West is really good G5 football. And I think we'll be talking about him as, man, how did Miami grab this guy so late? And are they going to sign him? How much are they going to sign him for? Barrett was the same way when he was out in Denver. Then we saw him get the big deal. Then we saw him down in Tampa. And now we see him with the Dolphins.
Definitely. Emory, we appreciate your time. Thank you for joining Dolphins in Depth. For people who want your information and want to follow you, how do they do so?
Go to footballgameplan.com/2024draft guide and pick up the largest draft guide in existence because it helps you not only now post-draft, but during the preseason as these rosters are transient and also during the season as well. So you can get a good idea of what's going on within the division and also with the Dolphins. So footballgameplan.com/2024draft guide. You can always follow me on Twitter or X at @FBallGamePlan. And just see me all around CBS Sports HQ all throughout the summer.
Emory, always appreciate your time, sir. Thank you for joining me. And we will be in touch later.